On congressional desks this morning are copies of a lengthy report just completed by the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, evaluating just how far the nation might go in growing its energy sources for the future. Some numbers in the OTA report are quite encouraging. Biomass sources of fuel, grain crops, grass, forests, animal manure, food processing waste, all of them so-called renewable sources, could provide 10 to 20% of the nation's energy requirements by the year 2000. At the upper range, that's nearly as much energy as the nation now gets from a 7 million or so barrels of foreign oil flowing into U.S. ports each day. It is 10 times as much energy as that currently derived from biomass sources. OTA estimates that multiplying fuel production by such amounts is technically possible, but its report raises a number of caution flags. It is tempting to consider such renewable sources as a panacea in coping with dwindling and ever more expensive oil and natural gas resources. Not the least of the hazards, OTA says, is the risk of environmental problems, not from the burning of these comparatively clean fuels, but from the risk of careless land and forest management. Another problem cited is the possibility that increased development of agricultural fuel sources could drive up food prices in the process. Gasohol production, 10% ethanol from grain and 90% gasoline, is perhaps the most highly touted current use of biomass fuels. But the report finds that growing and converting crops to ethanol requires about the same amount of energy as the ethanol itself produces. There would be an advantage, according to OTA, if the ethanol displaces premium fuels now used in ethanol distilleries. On the plus side, increased biomass energy production would create many new jobs. If properly managed, such an effort would give the nation a renewable energy base of sorts. It would pump new economic activity into the nation's rural areas, and it would, of course, start to make a dent in that persistent U.S. dependence on unstable sources of foreign oil. Biomass possibilities, the report seems to say, don't buy the nation a new energy engine, but they could keep the old one running a lot longer. Now this message.
Bill Truman of York Beach, Maine. Does Quaker State really help cars last?
I found that very cool. As I say, I have a car now that has a good many miles on it, so I've always used Quaker State. You take good care of your motor, and that motor will surely take good care of you. I just turn that key in that motor, and I listen to it purr just like a kitten and slap up a bowl of ice cream.
Quaker State helps cars last. Maybe that's why Quaker State is America's number one selling motor oil.
I've never used anything but Quaker State, because what else is there to use?
This has been First Line Report. Have a nice day. I'm Nelson Benton, CBS News.
Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. This is the 268th day of captivity for the American hostages in Iran. And it's the first full day since they were taken prisoner last November that the personal fate of the Shah has not been an issue. The ousted monarch died in Cairo yesterday of cancer at the age of 60, and he'll be buried there tomorrow with full honors. Bob Simon reports from the Egyptian capital.
The Shah's body was moved last night to Abedin Palace, the grandest in Cairo. The coffin will be draped with the flag of Iran tomorrow morning and carried by gun carriage down the avenues of Cairo to a mosque called El Rifai. The man who proclaimed himself King of Kings will be buried next to the last two kings of Egypt, Fuad and Farouk. The body of the Shah's father, who also died in exile, was buried in this mosque briefly during the Second World War. The American Embassy in Cairo says it has not yet been decided who will represent the United States at the funeral. It may be the American ambassador here, Alfred Atherton. It's almost certain that no American of higher rank will honor this man, who is Washington's staunchest ally in the Middle East for 35 years. In fact, the only American of note who already said he is coming is former President Richard Nixon. He's arriving in Cairo this afternoon with his son-in-law, Edward Cox. The only other celebrity expected is Constantine, the former king of Greece. He was exiled from his country after a coup d'etat in 1967. Bob Simon, CBS News, Cairo.
Mr. Nixon stopped off in Paris this morning en route to Cairo and told reporters that his journey represents public acknowledgments of the Shah's long friendship for this country. The former president said he's going to Cairo, quote, as a mark of personal sympathy and a demonstration of deep appreciation by one American citizen for the loyal friendship and support which the Shah extended to the United States. The Shah's death has brought a notably muted response at the State Department, reported now by Bernard Kalb.
The word here is that the Carter administration will be represented at the Shah's funeral by the U.S. man on the spot, Alfred Atherton, the ambassador to Egypt. No indication at this point that the president will be sending a special representative from Washington. This low-key approach in keeping with the muted statement issued by the administration on the Shah's death. Washington does not want to say anything or do anything that could further complicate the hostage situation. Whether the Shah's death will have any impact on the fate of the Americans being held in Iran is one of those questions for which no one at the State Department has any certain answer. Too early to tell is what they're saying here, steering away of any predictions. The private hope is that with the Shah now dead, the Iranians will turn from the past and concentrate on solving the country's problems and in the process release the hostages. But that remains just that, a hope. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Tehran Radio, not given to understatement, said yesterday, quote, the bloodsucker of the century has died at last. Iranian militants say the Shah's death will have no bearing on the fate of the American hostages. A special Senate committee tomorrow commences its investigation of the Billy Carter case, and the hearings are certain to prove embarrassing to the White House, especially since the Democratic National Convention gets underway 2 weeks from today in New York. Right now, President Carter has several hundred more delegates than he needs for renomination, but about 50 members of Congress are pressing for a rules change that would release the delegates from their commitments and let them vote for whomever they want. White House News Secretary Jody Powell says there is no reason for Mr. Carter to go along with such a move. Mrs. Rosalind Carter is in Lima this morning to attend the inauguration of Fernando Belaunde as president of Peru. Official representatives of 62 other countries are also there. And Charles Gomez tells us that this is much more than just another inauguration.
Belaunde returns to power 12 years after a military coup that ousted him from office. Belaunde's election also signifies a return to a constitutional form of government and is being watched closely by the Carter administration, which hopes it will influence democracy throughout Latin America. But the big question is whether the military will be content to remain out of politics for long. Though it initiated the popular elections that brought Belaunde to power, many believe that the armed forces will be waiting in the wings, prepared to assume control once again if Belaunde's administration falters. Belaunde is faced with the challenges of widespread poverty, unemployment, and inflation. His success could encourage claims by U.S. officials that in Latin America there is an alternative way, rather than simply a choice between a military dictatorship and a left-wing regime. Charles Gomez, CBS News, Lima.
The military dictatorship that seized power in Bolivia this month is under open attack now by the Roman Catholic Church. We'll hear about it from George Nathanson in La Paz.
The Bolivian Catholics Bishop Conference here has strongly condemned the recent right-wing military coup. The bishops, led by Bolivia's Cardinal Jose Clemente, have demanded the immediate restoration of the democratic government, which was overthrown by the armed forces. The bishops' communique was issued following a two-day meeting. The document said in part that the bishops are dismayed by the disruption of the democratic process and demands that the military regime immediately step down. The Catholic leaders called for a strict application of the International Convention on Human Rights, the return to the rule of law and constitutional rights. They deplored the repressive measures employed by the military, which include detention of persons without charges, executions without trial, and torture. The bishop's communique, which will be distributed throughout the churches in Bolivia, is considered the strongest condemnation of the military regime since it took power more than 10 days ago. George Nathanson, CBS News, La Paz, Bolivia.
In El Salvador, a prominent Catholic prelate, the Reverend Jesus Delgado, accuses the armed forces and right-wing extremists of causing much of the violence plaguing that Central American country. An estimated 3,800 deaths blamed on political disorders have occurred in El Salvador this year. Delgado charges that Salvadoran reporters have covered up the full extent of the violence, and he suggests that some reporters are selling themselves. Saturday's train derailment at Muldraw, Kentucky, near Fort Knox, caused no deaths but immense disruption of normal life. As we hear from Mike Idgerly of CBS radio affiliate WHAS in Louisville, things are not back to normal yet.
Three tank cars of vinyl chloride are burning slower now, and officials believe about two-thirds of the cargo has been consumed. But Kentucky's fire marshal, Rodney Raby, says the 2,000 evacuated residents of the Muldraw area will remain away from their homes until Wednesday, while the tankers burn themselves out.
We're going through a stress factor when you start riding the cars. Nobody knows exactly what the stress factor is. The unseen damages to the car, we don't know the weak points in the cars until these are studied. Once they're studied and the car is judged to be movable, then it will be moved at that time. Going through the removal of these cars due to the stress factor is very hazardous to the general area.
More than 7,500 people, mostly from the Muldraw area, were evacuated Saturday afternoon, but most were allowed to return to home by Saturday night. Mike Edgerly for CBS News, Louisville.
After several days of racial disturbances, Chattanooga, Tennessee was relatively quiet over the weekend. Officials indicate that the 11:30 p.m. to dawn curfew in force since Thursday will be lifted. The trouble began after two Ku Klux Klansmen were acquitted on charges of shooting and wounding four black women, and a third Klansman was convicted on a lesser charge. The U.N. General Assembly's emergency debate on Palestine is now coming to an end. Richard C. Hartlett reports that sometime today or tomorrow, the Assembly is expected to vote on a draft resolution summing up what it wants the United Nations to do about the Palestinian problem.
The draft reaffirms what it calls the displaced Palestinians' right to return to their homes, to exercise political self-determination, and to establish an independent sovereign state in Palestine. It also says the PLO should take part on an equal footing in all UN discussions on Palestine and the Middle East. As for Israel, the draft resolution calls upon Israel to withdraw from all territory occupied since 1967, including Jerusalem, and stipulates that the withdrawal begin by November 15th of this year. Failing that, the Security Council should consider political and economic sanctions against Israel. Perhaps in anticipation of a veto blocking any such action, the resolution provides for this emergency special session to resume its work. Unspoken, but clearly in mind, is the possibility that the General Assembly might then be asked to exclude Israel from participation in the Assembly, as it did to South Africa 6 years ago. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
The price of gold is on the downside this morning in Western Europe. It was fixed in London at $643.25 an ounce. That was $8.50 lower than Friday's final fix.
CBS News. America's efficiency is falling in factory and farm. I'm Richard C. Hottlett reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Labor Department says today that productivity in the United States dropped at an annual rate of 3.1% in the spring quarter, the sixth quarterly decline in a row, which means that for a year and a half, the economy has been producing less for each paid working hour. Such a drop in productivity represents a weakened ability to withstand inflation and to compete economically with other countries. If falling farm productivity is taken out of the calculation, the slump is even worse. The non-farm business sector saw productivity drop at an annual rate of 4.1%. The Middle East story after this.
Every long, hot summer, dogs and cats become victims of hungry ticks and fleas. But this summer, make your pet a victor instead of a victim. Get them the Hearts 2-in-1 Plus Collar, the first collar to kill fleas and ticks for 5 full months. The Hearts Collar's fast-acting odorless ingredients won't vaporize, stays on your pet, keeps working even if it gets wet. Get your dog or cat the Hearts 2-in-1 Plus Collar. Kills fleas and ticks on your pet for 5 months. Protects your home and family, too. Makes your pet a victor instead of a victim.
Looking for something, Betty?
For relief, Mrs. Rollins. Hemorrhoids again. Pain, itch.
Try this.
Preparation H?
Many folks tell me it temporarily relieves occasional pain and itch of hemorrhoidal tissues. Fast.
Really works?
Folks swear by it. Even helps shrink swelling of tissues due to inflammation.
I'll try it. Betty, feeling better today? Thanks to you and Preparation H.
Preparation H relieves pain and itch, helps shrink swelling. Use only as directed.
The United Nations General Assembly is approaching the end of its debate on the question of Palestine, with passage assured of a resolution calling on Israel to begin withdrawing from the territories occupied in 1967 by November 15th. The resolution also endorses the Palestinian people's right to self-determination and to an independent state in Palestine. The only question is how many countries will join Israel and the United States in voting against it. The Western Europeans have decided to abstain. They have been shifting to a position of greater sympathy with the Palestinians. Today, one of them, the United Kingdom, succeeded in patching up relations broken off by Saudi Arabia 4 months ago in protest against the television broadcast Death of a Princess. More from Dan Raviv in London.
A senior official in the British Foreign Office, Douglas Hurd, turned the trick while visiting Saudi Arabia this past weekend. Hurd explained to the Saudis, and not for the first time, of course, that the British government had no control over the independent television company that produced Death of a Princess. That film was a fictionalized account of the events leading to the execution of an Arabian princess who was charged with adultery. The Saudi government was so offended that it ordered the British ambassador to leave, and the Saudis postponed sending their new ambassador to London. Now that the British government's messages of regret have been accepted in Saudi Arabia, the ambassadors will take up their posts, and an Arab threat to boycott British goods will apparently be forgotten. Dan Raviv, CBS News, London.
The Israeli parliament, the Knesset, is reportedly pressing ahead with a bill legalizing the annexation of Arab East Jerusalem. Yesterday, Venezuela, one of about a dozen nations maintaining embassies in West Jerusalem, announced it is moving the embassy to Tel Aviv because of what it called Israel's unilateral action to change the city's status. Egypt is preparing an elaborate state funeral tomorrow for the deposed Shah of Iran. A check with Western embassies in Cairo shows most do not plan to send a representative. The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament says the death of the Shah will bring about a change in the hostage issue and that committees of parliament will start discussing it next week. However, several prominent deputies are still saying it could be a month before the hostage problem is taken up. The parliament is now debating President Bani Sadr's nomination of Mustafa Mir Salem as prime minister, with indications that has run into trouble. Stocks and other news after this.
Mr. Bugs Bunny speaking on behalf of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc? Say, when you go into the forest, do me a favor, Doc. Be careful with fire. I got enough problems as it is without being burned to a crisp. Ain't that right, Daffy?
That's absolutely correct. And little bunny rabbits aren't the only animals affected by a forest fire. What about us ducks?
And Tweety birds and widow deer and widow squirrels and widow chipmunks?
Hey, you varmints! What about us people? Forest fires destroy our homes, too. And that really burns me up.
Hi, this is Mel Blanc, the voice of some pretty funny characters. But a forest fire is no laughing matter. It's a tragedy. When you go into a forest, remember you're among friends. So please be careful. Only you can prevent forest fires.
A public service of this station, the Smokey Bear Program, and the Ad Council.
Widow turtles and widow butterflies and widow foxes and widow raccoons.
There is to be no curfew tonight in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The city, which saw racial violence beginning last Tuesday, seems to have calmed down. Police say most of the arrests they made last night were for simple curfew violations. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones average is up 2.47. Volume on the big board, 15,560,000 shares. The Dow Jones Industrials stand at 920.56. Richard C. Hotelet, CBS News.